Committee meeting to order for Thursday, February 23rd, 2023 at 6:30 in the City Hall Chambers. We have Deb Torres, Dave Schultz, Dan Transier, and myself present. This meeting is being conducted based on the, I can't even count as high as the executive orders that are allowing remote meetings. So we are in compliance with the
recording in progress
with the governor's proclamations. So we do have a quorum. We are missing Jeff Olson, but he may be on later. So that's it. We do have meeting minutes from October 13th, 2022. Does anybody have any comments regarding the minutes?
I have none.
None. We'll take those as presented. Thank you. We do have a citizens' comments section. We do have two people in the audience, and I'm seeing that they're saying no for comments. Okay. And we have no guests online, actually. So we'll go for the introduction then from staff.
That's me. All right. So we're picking up kind of where we left off last time. For the holidays, we've got around Thanksgiving, the consultant gave us a full draft of all the chapters we've already gone through. It's pretty much the meat of this entire project. There's still some chapters that we're not touching, like the overlay district or some of the other things that'll be added to the appendix. But for the most part, this is just going to be a general first review of the first draft. And then somebody out in the Zoom, can you see the shared, or actually you guys are on Zoom, can you see the shared
yes.
presentation? Okay. So we're just going to go over really quickly. The consultant couldn't be here tonight, but they provided us this presentation, which goes into detail on how the project aligns with the RFP and the goals of the entire project and how we're kind of trying to meet all those goals. I'm going to try and go through it very quickly. It was in your packets. So, you know, if you have any questions about it, you can ask, but for the most part, I really wanted this to be focused on the committee after I'm done with this little presentation, so you guys can pop up on questions we didn't resolve previously. If there's something in there you saw that wasn't added, we're still doing another layer of review, so we'll probably review this all again at the next, maybe in March, and keep, you know, going before we go on to the next thing. So, moving forward, here are all the project scope of work and all the steps we've been through so far. Right now we're on step 7. So the only one after this, you know, once we get this final draft review, we'll be integrating it as part of the smart code. So as part of the project, we will have this be available online. It's going to be an interactive smart code, you know, searchable. If I'm a developer and I want to, if I want to add, look up, you know, how much parking am I going to need? I want to develop something in the B2. It'll kind of all bring it to me and allow us to see it. So that'll be the next step, which we can talk about at the end. So moving forward to the how it aligns, the project has been aligning with our goals. There we go. So one of our objectives is aligning with the comprehensive plan. So a few things that we've done that were recommendations in the comprehensive plan. We eliminated some of our zoning districts, some of the ones that one aren't even used, or two are duplicates or very similar to other ones. We also added the new residential districts for smaller lots to try and add more housing equity options in the city. We repurposed the B2 to work as like our downtown overlay, considering the B2 and B3 were very similar. So the B3 is more of our general business now. And then we kind of tinkered with some of the lot widths and the sizes and things like that to some more modern standards, got rid of certain things in the bulk regulation table we don't even use. Additionally, some other things that align with the comprehensive plan, modernizing the landscape code and beefing it up, revising our off-street parking minimums to more modern standards, adding use-specific standards for a bunch of our different uses. So as opposed to just saying, this is allowed here, it's kind of been reorganized. I believe it's chapter 3 with those use standards. Incorporating the downtown overlay district into it. Like I said, we're leaving that whole section alone. That was a separate project we completed a couple years ago. But this now, the UDO will align with it much more clearly. Like I said, the B2 now is just the overlay district area. There are other certain parts of the UDO that call to it and try and align the goals from that into the entire UDO. Lots of updates to off-street parking. That was one of the things that was a major goal moving in and drafting the RFP. So we definitely revised a lot of the parking standards, added a maximum amount of parking. We are allowing for compact and motorcycle off-street parking. We talked about changing the numbers and the sizes. We went back because what we have is working for us. We also included cross-vehicle access between the properties, enhanced mobility, things like that. So another, and then also we added fee in lieu of parking standards. We added curbside pickup standards. We added standards for charging stations for electric vehicles. So again, some of those things that our previous, code, even the update from 10 years ago, didn't address any of the newer things going on today. So we added regulations for those. Landscape standards, again, this was completely rewritten and redone, as you guys know, because we reviewed it all, and hopefully you got a chance to look through all the graphics for this one. I felt it helped a lot with understanding what the language says. So adding that base around the buildings, having more defined language on what needs to be where and what's expected. And this was all reviewed as well by our landscape consultant. Adding green infrastructure and things like that was also one of our objectives. So we updated off-street parking lots and things like that, but the islands and the medians and things like that. Again, I think the graphics have gone a long way in helping understanding all the new updates that we're having. Again, this is kind of just showing the varying amounts, and the graphics are showing we have that table that we added showing how different uses need to be buffered from each other. And that has been updated. The sign ordinance was another big one from 2015's Supreme Court case, and I think Gilbert B. Reed. We had to change our sign ordinance completely. It had to be content neutral. So from that Supreme Court case, we can't define signs based by the content written on them, which means we can't have a political sign, we can't have a religious sign. Signs are signs. And we went through, I believe, signs 2 or 3 meetings. So, we added to have aggregate amounts to limit the amount of signage on each parcel in each building. We created more temporary regulations and added updated how we measure signage, especially on the wall signage. And then again, it's all content neutral. So again, for those temporary signs, it's more, depending on what district you're in, what location, what size it can be in, not necessarily what it says on the sign. So we definitely went through all that, and that's been updated in the code. Another objective was modernizing the subdivision control standards. So some of the additions we've added is adding objective requirements for the street design, specifying street design improvements for different types of streets within the city. We also added this connectivity index calculation, just so you have a better ratio of intersections versus roads. It adds to walkability features. It adds to a more cohesive neighborhood as opposed to having lots of long streets that with lots of similar looking houses and things like that. We also added cluster developments. So this is much more modern thinking. And this is a great graphic, the one on the left kind of showing a standard subdivision if a developer came in, but by offering the conservation development on the right side, you're adding actually more amenities. You're requiring people to take care of less of their yard and things like that while adding different community spaces, adding bike paths, things like that, which we did not have previously. So, and then also streamlining the procedures. This didn't get tinkered with too much. We're still gonna, for development applications at least, it's still gonna go through the same similar process. We did clarify and add some things to give staff a little more control over minor variations or minor things that may be too onerous for developers or residents to go through if there's smaller variations and things like that. We already have some of those in the code now, but we tried to expand and give a little more leeway so we're not bombarding people with unnecessary procedures. And the user-friendly format was a big objective. So again, now that the graphics are added, hopefully it adds some more of that understanding to it. Again, this will all go into that smart code online. That's gonna have more graphic features. We're gonna have a parking calculator. We're gonna have other calculators determine lot size, things like that. Chrissy and I have been in discussions about creating, it's called a 3D twin. So having a online mapping component with it. This is not technically part of this project, but something we're working on and discovering with Esri that not only can you then look up your parcel or look up some land you want to develop, it'll hotlink you to all the parts in the UDO you need to see. It can actually show you your building envelope and how tall you can build and what different types of things would look like. So that's going to spur off this, but we've also done that to add those tables, add the graphics, do the smart code to make it a lot more user-friendly for everyone than what we currently have. And this, again, the structure of it as well. I think Chris and I find it a little bit easier to navigate some of the way it's laid out as opposed to the zoning ordinance now. There are definitely many times the zoning ordinance, there is a line somewhere in chapter 8, but I was looking at chapter 3 because that covers accessory structures, but we did this one thing this one time. And so it's all laid out a little bit more cohesively to understand. If there's a specific issue with a retail store, I will look at the new standards. If there's something going on with signs, or I'll look at the sign standards. So it is very more evenly spaced out, which goes through. So that will be the end of that. Like I said, I was just trying to fly through that just so we can get to your guys' comments, because that's really what we're here for. I want to see if the committee had any big red flags or things they wanted to discuss. I can hand it off to Chris if you wanted to lead the way from here. I can stop sharing my screen. And I can check to see if Jeff jumped on. Jeff has not jumped.
Okay. So. Yeah, we've had some time to go through digest. We've got quite a bit of material that was given to us. From going through your reviews, does anybody have anything in particular you want to bring up, discuss after reviewing it, or any thoughts or comments on process based on it? What do we have? Deb?
Yeah, I was wondering if we're when is the next update for the comprehensive plan? Is there a year?
So our last comprehensive plan was 2016, which means you should update it every 10 years, which would be 2026. It is a two-year process, so we will probably start it in 2024, which means this year we're going to be starting to put together an RFP and kind of getting our goals together for what we want to look for. So pretty soon.
So your staff has made a request in the budget to start that process. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Other thoughts, comments? I know that does play into part of how this is going to move forward. Once we get this revised, we'll roll into that one. Dan, Dave, you guys have some thoughts?
I'm assuming this will be done before the next.
Oh, we're hoping to have this done before the summer.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so we're hoping, in terms of process, I think we're hoping there's some comments Kathy, city attorney, made that we want to clear up in the procedural section that we definitely want to modify. So I want to bring that back. I kind of want to bring the second draft back maybe in a month to the committee. I think in a previous email I asked if like March 20, I think there were a couple dates in there, the 23rd or something would work for everyone. Just so we can kind of make sure we didn't miss anything. I know we gave you guys a month to look at this one, but I want the consultants to fix our everyone's comments at once, and then we'll bring it back for that review. After that, that'll kind of be our open house copy, and hopefully we'll do the open houses in April, May, public hearings in May, June, you know, hoping for that adoption by summer.
So I know this has been kind of a long, kind of drawn out process at times. We've got a lot of information. Some of these meetings are pretty lengthy, and some of them were multiple meetings, such as signage. We had multiple meetings for that one. A lot of time in between each one of these, but I was going through trying to read the current draft we have for review and then going back to the minutes and going back to the audio. I do believe there's various items that have been missed, or I don't know if part of the comments that we went through was staff was going to go to the consultant and review it. There are a few things in particular that came up that I caught that stood out pretty quickly that I believe were missed. Okay. Some of the things such as block length, 800 foot is what's in there. I know there was quite a bit of pushback against that one because that seemed to be excessively short.
Yes.
There was a lot of discussion that we had about mid-block crossings and alternatives or incentives for using shorter block lengths or other venues of that sort. So I think that one was a blatant one that didn't hit the mark.
Our original block widths were like 1,300 or something. They put it down to 8, and it's still 8 in there?
It's okay. Still 800.
Right.
Another one was the right-of-way size, the minimum right-of-way being 75 feet. Then I think it was an 80 foot and then various others. There was questions about that as to the logistics and the need for that. Right now we have 60 and 66 foot for your standard locals. It's all a matter of development and amount of land. When we talked about that, if we're gonna require a wider right-of-way, there needs to be an offset on this, either the front yard setback or the size of the lots in order to maintain density, because otherwise you're losing a lot. So that's another one that stood out pretty quickly, and clearly that the mark was missed for the conversations that were hit. Let's see, there was another one that came up that I had tagged in here. Lot width measurements for the process of cul-de-sacs and curves. There was a diagram in here that shows a straight line on the backside of the curve, but it doesn't actually list where that is. That it's the backside of the tangent on the backside of a curve, or based on if it's a concave or a convex curve, there needs to be a little more of an explanation.
Was it the graphic itself
it's the
or
graphic.
The language? It was the graphic itself.
So it's in the graphic. The graphic has the tangent, but it doesn't show where that tangent is based on,
which would be the
outside of the curve of the radius. So things like that there that we talked about, we want to make sure that we're absolutely clear. That was not in there. And I'm scrolling through with the fourth, like I said, a lot of information.
These are mostly in Chapter 7.
Most of them are in Chapter 7, yes. That's the one I went through quite rather thoroughly. But there are things like that there. I don't know if anybody else caught any other ones, but it's concerning that we have quite a few of them that were missed and not incorporated if this is our... we've seen other versions of individual pieces, but this being the collective of a couple chapters here.
Agreed. And staff noted some other changes, especially in the lane use section, that weren't caught and addressed. So these don't incorporate those changes. So that's good that we're getting this feedback.
And that's why I was hoping that with the time we had between the last meeting, the reason we canceled that last meeting was we didn't have this document in front of us. I wanted to make sure we had plenty of time to review it. So going through the amount of data, and like I said, trying to go back to minutes to make sure you refresh yourself on what was actually discussed, those are the kind of things I want to make sure that we could get this taken care of and try to make sure that all of our comments have been actually incorporated or at least addressed, because I know that there's some that have comments from our staff on the on some of the items. So I'm open to discussing this one further if anybody has any other ones, but primarily this is just making sure that we have everything incorporated that we wanted to have incorporated into it. Because this connectivity index calculation, I mean, that was one I know we spent a lot of time on, you know, the need for that one, what was the benefit to incorporating something like that there. I mean, a lot of things were actually incorporated, but some were blatantly not.
Can we go down the list of things?
Oh, you want to go check it on my chat?
Yeah, Deb, if you have a list, please let us know.
We can go through that one if you want to.
I had a couple of things too, but you might cover them.
Yeah, the landscaping, the planting spaces, like if you're replacing trees, you got like 6 trees for a 30-inch tree replacement. You know, downtown Plainfield where the courthouse or the, along the river there, they did that. They planted all these trees and it looks like a nursery now that it's matured after about 15 years. So we got to be careful, like especially in the islands and parking along buildings and stuff as far as screening, because even like I went shopping down, what is it, 59 in Sherwood, and there's a bank that I was looking for and it's so landscaped I couldn't even see it from the street. You know, that you run into those issues because things grow and they get big, and I made that mistake, you know, planting some of my stuff. When you plant things too close together, in the long run it becomes weedy and sometimes doesn't even survive, like on the islands and stuff, and I just wanted to address that.
Yeah, no, real quick, Deb, on that one. One, I remember we talked about that. The other part that we added to that was the fee in lieu. Mm-hmm. That was one of those to try to help mitigate that, was if there are too many in a certain area, a fee could be done for...
I saw that for parking, but I didn't see it for landscape.
And this is in just the general...
I think we have
Chapter 5, Development Standards Landscape.
Fee in lieu is for landscaping is page 35 of 42. I can get to that. Hold on one second.
Yeah.
What page is it?
Hold on.
Page 122 in the PDF.
Yeah, it's
122.
It's
boy, all these are
Chapter 5, page 35 of 42.
Yeah.
Yep.
Number 4.
Yeah, fee in lieu. A fee may be provided.
So it does have a fee, mm-hmm. a fee instead. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then like monument signs, if you plant too much stuff around them, you're going to kind of cover up the foundation, which might, you know, be a more expensive foundation. I mean, maybe you're overplanting around those, in my opinion.
I can pull that up, is that you're saying the number that we're requiring? Because so we don't require it now, we're going to require it in the code. You're saying it's too much.
So we did it per square foot?
I think we did it per square foot of the sign.
Yeah. So signs are checked.
You know, if you're planting grasses, they're going to get about this wide. Mm-hmm. And some don't get very high, but then others do, and then...
So it's chapter 6, page 12.
Yep.
Of 29.
No wonder there's on the PDF, because that's the one I've made my notes on. Chris, do you know?
So on the PDF base, 141.
Yeah, on a basic monument.
131?
141.
Yeah, we switched the monument signs into two categories, basic and then a upgraded sign. So if you use premium materials and things like that, you get a larger square footage of sign. But for like a basic monument, we did the landscape area, so extend 3 feet from the sign base at all sides. You have to have a minimum of 75% of the landscape area shall be improved with shrubs or native grasses. The remaining landscape area shall be improved with perennials or ground cover, meeting standards set forth in the landscape section. So,
well, if you look at the overhead picture of the top of the mound,
mm-hmm.
it just looks so like too much at the bottom.
The example that they showed on the top of 12 and 29.
Okay, so the yeah. graphic is should well, the graphic should match what our standard is.
So it should be 3 feet. That doesn't.
I mean, they can be groups if you want, like 2 and 1, or you know. I think we discussed that, but you just can't plant too many plants and expect to see the sign later.
Oh,
I mean, depending on what they decide.
Right. So the higher quality the sign, the less area you have to landscape.
Yeah. That was actually another one of those things. We're trying to encourage higher quality signage. So if you get a basic sign, you get less square footage and you have to landscape it more. If you make a really pretty sign with premium materials, you get to landscape it less.
And based on the, you know, if you're on page 11, 140 of the PDF, the landscape, mm-hmm. it just says you need to have a minimum of 75% of the landscape area or 50% of the landscape area improved with shrubs, native grasses, based on the part of the section that it's referenced. So it's not telling us the quantity here. It's saying that it has to be 75% or 50%, depending on your sign class.
Right.
And then you go back to the standards 10.5.3, that tells you what types of plants are
acceptable.
So that you can meet their criteria. Too much, though, 75%, is that too much? Because you have to think about long term, are people going to keep these areas maintained?
So let's run it. Okay, let's say I have a 4 foot wide base. That means I have to go 3 feet on each side. So now I have 10 feet. And I got to go 3 feet. So I have a 10, I have 60 square feet of base that I gotta cover. 75% of that is helping to get a baby. 45? It's like 45 mm-hmm. square feet of landscape. Yeah. So is that too much?
Yeah.
Well, it depends on the plants you're putting in. That's gonna be key. It's and this is where landscape design and setting a numeric code system to it is highly subjective.
Right.
You could pick a black haw viburnum that's going to be 6 foot across, 8 feet tall, but then you can also pick an alpine currant, which is going to be 2 feet across, 18 inches tall. Both of them are a shrub. They're both a deciduous shrub, but clearly significantly different sizes in terms of footprint and vertical height. So both of them would meet the criteria of a shrub. Obviously much different in scale. So this is where we have to allow the designers the ability to actually design something that meets their needs and their desires of what they want for a landscape, while we're also trying to instill the fact that we want quality landscape. So the idea of saying you want 50% of the area adjacent to it landscaped or 75% makes sense, just have to allow the flexibility of what that material is. And maybe it's a little too rigid just saying 3 feet on each side of it or 2 feet on each side of it has to be landscaped. It should be, maybe it's more, you have to landscape in the general vicinity.
Right. The more I think about it too, in terms of just doing the sign review, a lot of sign companies don't do landscaping all that, you know what I mean?
They will partner with this.
But if we do have rigid numbers,
it might not
help them.
Right. But this is one where we probably need, this is the kind of section that needs flexibility. I mean, we have to have our intent. And Deb, I think you could agree that, you know, we want landscape, it's just a matter of how much, because the intent has to be. Maybe there is we have some staff authorities in certain ones where the administrator of the code is the one that approves these parts. Maybe that's part of it as well, as long as it's meeting intent, you know, placement and, you know, the exact location, they might be a little further away than your cluster on one end or the other of a sign. Maybe that works better.
I'm just concerned that we'll get someone who meets the standard when they come in, but as years go by and maintenance, and they're going to cover it with mulch. Mm-hmm. So I think to avoid that and to keep it looking nice, I don't think we need 75% of shrubs and native grasses, and then 25%, because it states that the remainder would be ground cover.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we just say, if we want to go less, we could go 50, but we could say that the area, 75% of the base area or 50% of the base area has to be a mix of grasses, ground cover, and
shrubs. I was
going to
say, too, so for flexibility, you could even just add language stating, you know, a majority of the base at the ground must be covered.
Majority is too broad.
As determined by.
I don't want to.
No, you don't want to.
No, I don't want that.
So you read it.
I think a mathematical part of it, and, but it's still tough because whether you say shrubs or, you know, native grasses, perennials, whatever you do, there's going to be a lot of subjectivity to it.
Right.
And it needs to be open to the petitioners, whoever's coming in. If they want a sign that has lettering that starts at the ground, you got to give them flexibility to allow that. You know, otherwise we're forcing all signs to be up 3-4 feet in the air.
Because you have to put a 3-foot shrub underneath.
But you don't have enough space if 75% has to be.
And this is what I'm
saying.
And if we have a 12-foot height limit or whatever, we or 16, no.
But you can say that, you know, there's going to be a large landscape mass immediately adjacent to it. You know, kind of, you got the sign, whether it's, you know, sticking out, and then you got a massive landscaping adjacent. It all depends on heights and circumstances.
So are we comfortable saying that 75 is too high?
I think it is.
Will we be comfortable with a total of 50% of landscape or vegetation material consisting of shrubs, native grasses, perennials, or ground cover?
Are you doing any annuals in there too, or
flowers? Well, the ground covers. I mean, the ground covers could be whatever.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because the one thing that I'm concerned with is, we're going to go through and we're going to have monuments put in, and then we're going to have these rectangular landscape beds.
Right.
Right.
That's what I'm thinking right now. It's all going to be boxes.
No undulation of anything, right?
So,
we're too rigid on this section.
Yes.
Okay, so, I mean, definitely get rid of the 3 feet on each side, 5 feet on each side. The percentages become lower.
Just an idea, since we're granting size of sign, instead of saying, you know, a certain distance around each side, an area equal to the total perimeter of the sign structure.
Yeah.
That's.
If you do a 20-foot tall sign, 6 feet wide, that's the area you have to have in landscape. If you do a 3 foot by 4 foot.
And you just say, provide a landscape plan with, you know, your sign permit application, which will be reviewed by staff.
And of that perimeter, 50% for a base or mid-quality sign.
No, so we can do it the same for both. 50% of the area shall be shrubs, shrubs, grasses, and 50% shall be.
Because I do kind of think about some of the smaller businesses that put up a 20 square foot sign, a 15 square foot sign, and a multi-tenant thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just there. We're going to make them put more landscaping than the signs were. Yeah. So if you do it as a ratio of the sign,
you're providing a sign. You put in
a small sign, give us a little native grass, maybe some flowers, and we're good. Whereas, as it's written now, if you're putting in a low quality sign that's 15 square feet, you got to add, you know, 80 square feet of landscaping. So.
Is that a lot for a big sign? Sounds like it.
No.
Oh, I was just saying, for we don't want to, as it's written now, you don't want somebody with a small business with a little sign and put in more landscaping than the
sign.
Right. So I think you're right. It's too rigid, but I like the idea of making it a ratio towards the outside perimeter of the sign area in general.
And you're not saying specifically it has to be 3 feet on each side.
Correct.
It just...
It needs to be adjacent to the sign.
Yeah, and then you can arrange it the way...
Immediately adjacent to the sign.
In a configuration to allow creativity. Okay. So any other thoughts? We can keep going through, so...
I had one about the island trees, too. You know, trouble with trees and islands, they're gonna make it a lot, though.
I forget. So are we required in the parking islands?
Parking islands, yes.
I think we were required to shade trees. Is that what it was?
There's no room for the roots to grow.
Yeah.
Right.
Second of all, it's a water issue. It's the seed, it's the lime stone underneath.
Yeah.
And I know it looks nice, but poor things, you feel sorry for them when you see them because they're like half dead.
So the way that it was changed, Deb, for the parking island end caps, one canopy tree and three native grasses provided for every parking area end cap.
Yeah.
Okay. So it actually does say one. The graphic shows two.
So we'll change the graphic.
Okay. The graphic.
So now there is a... Yeah, oh, so this one. If the end cap extends the width of the double bay, then two canopies shall be provided. And I think that's what we determined we were comfortable with. If I were to go back to the notes, I think...
How wide are those?
10 feet.
And we changed this to be the interior 10 feet, back curb to back curb, 10 feet by the width. So we wanted to make sure we had a sufficient space.
And it would have a minimum soil depth of 36 inches.
Yeah, I saw that. I don't know. Good luck.
Page 28.
28 of that section.
Yeah, so that's the correct. Yeah. And there's one on 30.
Yeah. For the actual design of it. Yep.
There.
Yeah, I remember that one, Deb. We made the
I remember we were
the
talking
base
about
bigger.
Yeah. I mean, people are putting in an expense, you know, to plant a bunch of trees and have them just die on them because they can't keep them. There's no way to water them. Well, gators when they first start, but unless they have a drip system. You guys want me to go on,
please?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Deb. You've got the floor at the moment, so.
Yeah.
Okay. The cluster developments. Is there certain areas that you guys foresee these developments happening?
It depends if the area has any rich ecological areas. Maybe there's wetlands. Maybe there's an existing area that has high quality, flowers or trees or, you know, that they could design around that amenity rather than clearing it.
Yeah, the other part you could look at is severe topography. There is a piece on the very south side of town adjacent to existing development that does have severe topo that would, I think, would be ideal for something like this, because then you're not cutting thousands of cubic feet of soil to move them from one spot to another. You can use, you know, benefit from clustering.
And what kind of, are these single family homes, like a senior development, or what do you think these would be?
It could be whatever they
could be. We have restrictions for R1, R2, and the R2 districts, or R2D, so basically single family homes up to town, duplexes. I will say that this was...
We all say family, single unit.
Sorry, single unit. Yes. But again, this was also kind of more so geared towards like avoiding PUD developments, allowing more things outright. These cluster developments, a lot of PUDs and newer subdivisions are going that route anyway. we're trying to make that an outright thing you can do so you don't have to go through the whole process, right? And you can, you don't have to come in and say, well, I need more density here because I'm saving this wetlands. They can just do it because they get that bonus directly from the UDO.
Yeah. Well, these smaller lots, what are they, 6,000 square feet?
What's our smallest size?
The R2A, I think we did 6 or 6,500.
Well, I was looking at these lots, and they're saying, if you do, like, say 5,000 square feet, but there's no room for the garage on the side, so what they're saying is make them, I think, 70 by 70 lots, which would be 4,900 square feet, so that you get a footprint for the garage in the front of the house, or more conducive floor plan on the inside of the home. So I'm not quite sure what this 6,000 square feet would accomplish, except make more like row houses. Is that correct?
So the R2A district, if we're switching to chapter 3 there, we did 6,000 square feet with 65 foot wide lot width, which I believe ends up having almost 100 foot depth. It does make it a skinnier lot for sure.
But R2A is duplex, right? No.
No, R2A is the new one that we're trying to add, and not to mention there are a lot of lots fitting this description in the old Bristol and old Yorkville. So it was kind of modeled after that as well, to provide more housing equity and opportunities to build in Yorkville, you know, because before it's 12,000 square feet or nothing.
But I don't understand what kind of product you end up with, you know. If you got to put the garage in the back of the house, you're almost like row houses.
Just the assumption that this would be a rear load product would not necessarily be the case. There's a lot of product being built today that would fit on a 65 foot wide lot. There are products that will be built on a 40 foot wide lot that will accommodate a front load garage as well. It's all based on the side yard setbacks, the design of the home, and you know it goes on from there. But there's a lot of product.
What are the setbacks? I mean, what size house could you build on that? And then what are the setbacks?
With the 10 foot setback on the sides, you get a 45 foot wide house. So if you have a 20-foot garage, say 24, so it'll be, if you want a two-car garage, it would be 20 feet of that, 25 feet of house frontage.
Those are the houses where the garage is like right underneath the second floor, right?
Yeah. You could I mean, there's a whole lot of different.
You could have front and push back a little
bit. And actually, I believe
you can build an 1,800 square foot ranch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Statistically, it's 1,800 square feet on a ranch. You're going to take out probably 400 for your garage, a standard small garage, which is, when I say small, it's two car. But then you can also go vertical. So you've got 1,400 square foot living space on a ranch for that size lot. Now, that doesn't mean that that's exactly what you're going to have, but that's on the mathematics side of it with the 400 square foot garage. You know, some garages are 600, or in some places we even do allow tandem garages or single car garages in some places. Yeah. But it's not. This is not something that's out of line with the current market.
Yeah, actually, I remember looking up because I had bought a house last spring. I have a 70 foot lot, so not very different. But it looks like a normal house. It's a fifth of an acre, and I have a two car garage, and it's an Oakhurst, an Aurora. Just built a while ago, but I wouldn't consider it like, obviously I bought it. I wouldn't consider it a bad neighborhood or like, kind of a bad product.
So what we're getting away from is the assumption that the larger the lot, the higher quality the home. That is not the assumption that's made across the country where you're talking about lot size. You have very small lot sizes in San Francisco, you have a higher quality home, the houses cost a lot. But the point is, the lesser amount of land, A, you can get more product, but B, you can have it a marketable rate to make the housing stock diverse and the end user have an equitable chance of buying a home in a community.
Well, that's kind of funny because I went out house shopping and I don't know what's affordable out there.
Right. What's affordable?
$100,000 more and the product is not as good.
We're doing land use, so we're doing land use, so we can't in zoning. We deal with the land, not the user. So if we want to incorporate architectural standards and minimums, and we can, but we've decided to get away from a lot of that on the level of you know, diversity of home stock.
In general, Deb, it's aligned with more recent planning efforts to provide right. different types of housing. We did this aging and community program, and almost every single senior citizen is like, well, I got to move out of my house in Yorkville because they're huge. I'm not taking care of that yard and things like that. So by providing a different opportunity, we can retain those residents, lifelong Yorkville residents in Yorkville for even that. Or you're providing a starter home for someone right. who wants to work nearby, or maybe they work at Menards, or, you know, so it's about providing opportunities. We're trying to create a code that helps provide opportunities, but you're right. We can't control how much things cost. You know, we can only do...
I know. It's kind of funny. You're getting a lot less for a lot more. And I feel bad for people out there because it's not good. You know, I understand seniors' concerns too, but, you know, I understand where they're coming from. They don't need a bigger place, you know, or too much extra parking. They don't have kids. But what happens when you get a subdivision that has a bunch of kids? And, you know, we had this talk when the senior place housing was built over there by the park, by Heartland Circle, and the houses, the distance between the houses. And I think we actually had them do that in Hardy, wasn't it?
What happened was the fire district was not comfortable with the 10-foot building separation, so it was 5-foot yard setbacks. So they just required the first floor of the adjacent sides to have a higher level of fire retardant
material.
Drywall. So it wasn't the exterior. It wasn't the exterior. It was the drywall. It was probably thicker or a higher quality fire-rated drywall.
Yeah, because they were worried about getting their vehicles in between the mm-hmm. houses.
You know, Yorkville's laid out really kind of nice now, and you start getting a bunch of these cluster subdivisions. I mean, are we going to change the way Yorkville seems? Like, if that's what builders want to do, and that's what they're going to start building all over Yorkville, I mean, is that a fear I'm having that I shouldn't be having?
I don't see the cluster being the primary go-to.
Right.
The cluster is a style of development that is based on conservation and preservation of features and attributes that you would not otherwise be able to develop.
Is that what a builder is going to think? Or do they just think they can just start building these, you know, regardless of the conservation that is in the situation with the property that they are looking at?
Well, if a builder is just concerned about the density, they're not going to do a conservation. They're going to go through and they're going to do the R2A.
Right.
Because that is not a cluster development. That is a zoning district that just allows 6,000 square foot lots. And that is regardless of the other features. Now, there are still requirements that they'll have. Stormwater, open space, parks, school, streets, etc. The cluster is a different mindset. We have elements that we want to maintain or need to maintain, and we're going to get some benefit out of maintaining those as compared to trying to ram things in. And if we got a wetland, we're going to have to spend money to mitigate the wetland and relocate or do things with that. So it's a...
So those are conservation, what you're clustering, you're considering conservation.
It's another way of putting it. We just didn't choose to use the term conservation district because that comes across a lot of times as a negative, because it's, you know, it assumes it's for the purpose of conservation. It could be used for the purpose of just keeping open space, if somebody so chose. Because honestly, it keeps your development costs down significantly if you were to do a cluster development.
The market's going to dictate whether
the market's going to dictate everything.
So if you look at the example that was provided on chapter 7, page 5 of 18, you're looking at two developments with the same number of homes. So
right.
You've cleared everything, you have, you know, woodland areas that you're building upon, and you still got 32 homes. In the cluster, you have 32 homes, and you get four, the net,
That item is actually in the
presentation. Okay. So you get the net density, instead of one dwelling unit per acre, you get four per acre. But you have a walkable community in some areas. You have saved areas that have some ecological value to the community. And it looks a little bit more aesthetically pleasing than a straight subdivision with one curved road.
I mean, and as a non-developer, but I would think if you're preserving natural elements and providing it more amenities, you're probably going to have a higher demand for increased price and a nicer product.
So the smaller lots, that's not necessarily conservation. The 6,000 square foot lot, I think, is what it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right, because if you go on the, where did the chart go? I lost the chart.
I lost my Zoom meeting somehow.
Page 16 in chapter 3.
I'm still here, but I don't know where I went.
Oh.
Oh, you didn't share? Yeah, there you go.
You said it was the R2A?
Yes.
The clusters?
Yes. So chapter 3.
Yep.
Page 6 of 16 is the buffer.
And that's a new category too.
That's the new one we created.
Correct.
We reduce the R... No, the R2 stayed the same.
No, R2 is 12.
Do we go from 12 to 10?
Yeah.
Right, now the R1 is 12,000. That's correct.
But just to be clear, that the cluster development is not a zoning district.
Correct.
Our zoning districts are the R1, R2, 2A, 2D that we're talking about for the residential.
That's why I went back and looked to see if there was a new category of clusters.
No, it is just that there are bonuses.
I saw that at the end and I'm like, wait a minute.
You get bonuses for cluster development, for conserving natural, there's a list, wetlands, mature trees, critical habitats, things like that.
Yeah, clustering is basically just an overlay on top of a district in order to get certain bonuses and utilize the land better.
Well, I still think 6,000 square feet's too small, myself. My opinion. We added that.
What can you? Not to belabor, but can you explain what your adversity to a 6,000 square foot lot is?
Well, I just think the size of the home you can put on it, you know, to keep from being too close to your neighbors. I know people don't mind that, but, you know, then you get these people that, you know, ruin everything for everybody. I just think it looks nicer. Yorkville's spread out a little more than most towns. I think we've enjoyed that, you know, up until this point. I know there's older areas that the houses are closer together, or you know, the senior development, but basically a lot of the new subdivisions are, you know, came along really nice, to, you know, with the bigger size lot, and I think you ended up with a better product for the homeowner in the end with the nicer size lot.
I understand what you're saying, Deb, and with the point that the staff made about the housing diversity, the aging in place, we don't have that housing stock. And that's a big part of it. You mentioned the older part of town. There were smaller lots, quite a few smaller lots, because when we were, this came about when we were doing the domestic or urban chickens. We found out how many small lots there really were in town.
Well,
with that, the reason you're right, we do have a lot of these 12,000 square foot lots, which are the standard, because that was the only R2 we had. Everything below that was duplex or estate lots or townhomes. That's what we had. It was standard 12,000, so everything built at 12,000. And back in the early 2000s, that was acceptable because the market bore it. Now, the market wants more diversity in lot housing stock. And that's what we're just trying to offer, is that.
I get the diversity, Chris, but making the lot smaller, does that really change the diversity in the home?
There's still going to be
it's just 12,000 more money to filter
lot developments.
And we're not limiting less.
If the market says that only developers want to make 12,000 square foot lots, that's what they're going to build. If the market dictates that people want 6,000 square foot lots, then they're going to have the option to do that. I just think what you said is right, is we're going for a goal of offering different alternatives to different developers, because that's the way the market is trending. In 5 years from now, if no one builds a development like this, then it could be changed. Or you'd still have the ability to build the bigger houses on the bigger lots.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think Chris and Dan hit a really good point too, Deb. It's just like, you weren't able to build a house this size. Certain types of homeowners couldn't build in Yorkville before this, and that's what we're trying to change, is why would we exclude people from living here? And we're trying to create opportunities for more type, and the market will bear, if people want, because I'll tell you right now, Grand Reserve, there's a bunch of 9,000 square foot lots with single family homes on them, and they're right next to the 6,000 square foot lots with the age targeted Ryan homes up there, and Grand Reserve's building, so it is in demand right now, and that was adopted in 2003.
There's your diversity. You got bigger lots next to a senior, residential area. But I'm just wondering if what'll happen is, if you allow this is what we're going to end up with. And if that's the market, so be it. But in the long run, 20 years down the line, what's it going to look like?
In depth, I'll tell you, I work for a national home builder. The target is not all small lots. There needs to be diversity. I can tell you that most projects I work on, there is a diversity of housing stock and housing lot size, because you can't just build one product, one small lot on everything and be successful. It doesn't work. So the market will drive it. And just keep in mind, this does go out for a public hearing, so we're going to get input from the public, from our residents, on what they feel about this change. So feel free, when we get this out to the public hearing, make sure that you make that known, because that will be taken into consideration when it's considered.
My worry is 20 years down the line, just like a tree when it grows, what is it going to look like when it's done? I mean, is this what we're looking for? Is this what, we're still in charge of the town, and how it's going to look when it's finished. And I think that's where we're at right now, is how do you want to look, how do you want it to feel and look,
This is one residential zoning district out of six that we offer.
Yeah. But I'm saying builders, I think they want to go to make the most money and get them close together. They don't care,
Can I ask a question?
I guess I look at things a little bit different, because I'm so, I love Yorkville, and I like the way it is now and the way it feels. And I think if you just start jamming all these, a lot of people in a small area are going to get congestion and you're going to have problems. Maybe I'm wrong.
All right. So with that, Deb, we do understand your position. Yeah. I mean, like I said, this is not going to be the last time this is heard, so keep your notes on this one and as we move forward.
Yeah. You know, I also didn't see, like, those little houses that we talked about. Were we supposed to go over that tonight?
Are you talking about the ones like they're building in Oswego, the rental communities?
No, it's on portables, I guess.
You mean tiny houses? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, little houses.
Or are you talking about accessory dwelling units?
Yeah, like you could have a little house, portable or whatever.
An accessory house. Yeah, you're talking about on a, so if you got a single family lot, having a secondary unit, like a detached residence on the property.
Right, but weren't they snowball? And they just had to be on a base or something?
No, so for the accessory dwelling units, so you're talking about, not like, let's say I have my house and I have a deep two-car detached garage and I want to change that into a rentable unit. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Well, they were like little houses, but they were portable. Like you could tall.
Oh, talking about the tiny house where they're on wheels. Yeah, we didn't put any language in here for that.
We didn't talk about those?
No, and that would more or less follow the building code too. Like we don't allow mobile homes on them.
There was also, let me see, I had one more question. Recreation vehicles, we're only allowed one, so it's like you have two snowmobiles, you can't have two, or just, is it both on one trailer?
They're defined differently.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Snowmobiles and ATVs and recreation vehicles are defined differently.
Okay. And the parking calculations on those charts, like for parking lots and stuff, were those all based on the bigger parking spaces that we discussed?
So we kept our parking spaces the same as we have them now. There were some in that chart that were updated to more current, like, APA standards.
So it's 9 by 18, right?
Right. Yeah. So we originally made the spaces smaller.
They originally
did. Well, yeah, our consultant recommended a smaller space so you could conserve more land, right? And then we said, well, you know, there are a lot of bigger vehicles still out here. It's not like Yorkville's going to change overnight. So we kept the bigger spaces. And in general, the engineer, public works, everyone's comfortable with our parking spaces right now. So if it wasn't broke, we chose not to fix it. But definitely that chart, there were some updates to quantities.
Right, and we did.
I wonder if they filed size, because when you go down this chart, you know, just lists so many per, I don't know how many feet or whatever, but I just want to make sure that, you know, you were following that standard you set it on that chart at the beginning.
We did incorporate a compact parking dimension so that you can add those into, like, if you, for motorcycles or whatever, so that you're not.
Right.
But we do keep the same standard width of 9 feet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the couple areas where we do have 8 feet, it is
tight.
Too tight.
Okay, I just want to make sure on that one. And then the electronic signs, we're not allowing wall electronic signs, correct?
Whew, that's a good question. I don't remember where we landed on that.
So let's see. It would I thought we talked about it.
I know we talked about it.
I can't remember where we landed on that.
That's chapter 6.
Chapter 6. So we are allowing electronic message boards, but you were saying completely all electronic signs. Is that what you're asking?
No, I know that the ground monument one seemed okay, but we were having a problem with wall electronic signs. We don't want the Vegas look or
Were talking about like the changeable copy signs being wall mounted.
Yeah, like the moving electronic billboard thing.
Let's see where we go. Temporary.
Multi-tenant, so it would be 729.
Going backwards.
All right, so the actual discussion we had, Deb, you had asked about if the electronic signs are allowed on walls, if the If the code is passed as written, the signs will become legally non-conforming. We had discussions suggesting if businesses wanted that type of sign, they must forego the monument sign, and it would allow them a monument. So the consensus, electronic signs should generally be on monuments, but existing wall signs are legal non-conforming. That's what we decided in a prior meeting. So does that coincide with what we have in the proposed ordinance?
Yeah, I don't see. I just see the electric signs as ground.
Being monument signs.
Yes.
Which,
correct.
Yes. So that
it
any of them.
Then wall sign.
So if it's there now, it's legal non-conforming if this were to be passed. But no one would be allowed to put an electronic board on their building.
The changeable copy electronic. Correct.
Yes.
That's, yes, this section we have is electronic message boards. At current, this draft, it does not say they only are single-tenant and multi-tenant monument signs. So not wall signs. If we want to add them to the wall signs, we can.
And so, correct me if I'm wrong, but if it's not explicitly stated, it's prohibited.
Yes,
correct.
Yes,
okay.
Yes. And it says monument.
Prohibited.
Okay. By the fact that it's not stipulated. It's
you're right. And because right now, there are a couple places where they're on the walls.
Yes.
Because it's not written in a way like this.
Yes.
That is.
Okay.
Sounds right.
So we have addressed what your concern is, Deb. But we will still have several that will be legal non-conforming.
Right. From
right now.
Yes. From if we approve it as is.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
But if
what
they
about
wanted
window
a new
electronic
sign? As long as, if I, how is the language for replacement of damaged signs or upgrades?
You can do maintenance only.
Right.
You can't expand it, and we've included if the sign face needs to be repaired, we consider that a repair, but you can't put in a whole new one.
But if they want a new one, they'd have to put it on the monument.
On the monument, right.
Any structural change to a non-conforming sign means you have to bring it into conformance.
Yeah.
So if they were able to, say you've got a 2x3 existing electronic sign, you could say it's starting to fail. Mm-hmm. Replace with an exact 2x3.
Nope.
That requires.
Yeah.
That's okay. Even though they could do it in the dark at night, we wouldn't know any difference,
right.
But it would be an illegal.
You could replace the bulbs,
yeah.
Right? But
yeah.
Okay.
Would we know that you replaced the motherboard or that you changed it out? Probably not, but for the most part.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Good on that one, Deb?
Yeah. And is there any window electronic signs? I mean, do we address that or is that allowed?
Window signs are non-illuminated,
right? No, because you're allowed to have like an open sign. I think we kept window signs 50%.
Because we had this discussion about.
We did have this discussion.
Yeah.
It was the open signs, the hours, lottery signs.
Those are exact.
Those
they have to be more than 12 inches from the.
Window
signs.
Permanent sign copy area of a permanent window sign shall be 25% of the square footage of an individual window once the sign is located. It does not determine whether it's illuminated or not. So we did not specifically say not illuminated.
We discussed that.
I know we discussed it, but I think what we were thinking was for like open signs and things like that. But we can add in there, all wall signs must be not illuminated, but you can't accept an open and closed sign because then you're defining what it's
content.
I can't exempt an open closed sign because now that's content based.
Okay, but the wall sign you can say prohibited, right? Electronic.
Yes. Electronic changeable copy signs are only allowed on monument signs, and then there's specific percentages that you're allowed to have as an electronic changeable copy.
Okay, good. One thing about signs, one other thing is the height. you know, we've gone through this. We established a height, and then the gas station situation came up.
We're talking about monument signs?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just think that was a bad call, but that was my opinion. I think if you make something, you say this is what it should be, and you put it in your codes, or, you know, somebody shouldn't be able to come along and just say, hey, I need a 500-foot sign because, you know, whatever. I really think it should be conforming to whatever's going on in our codes. I don't know how we can avoid that, but that, yeah, even the counties, you know, didn't like what was happening with that, but we have no control. We're just advisory, but I don't know how you...
We can put in what we feel should be our standard. If an applicant wants to apply for a sign variance or a variance in general, feeling that they have a hardship against them, they can make that case.
And we did revise these heights. Page 143 of the PDF is the multi-tenant monument signs, and then prior to that are the single-tenant signs. We did change heights and square footages of those to be more accommodating and try to have consistency with the signs. And we reduced most of them from what some of the allowances were, because we were looking at some of our signs that are upwards of 25, 26 feet height.
Yeah.
And now the largest height is 14 feet in a B3 M1 M2.
Right.
For a commercial sign, you're looking at either a 10-foot or
14.
Up
basically,
to 14
again,
feet
if
the maximum.
You, no, if you use 12, a high quality, well, if you make a high quality sign, you get to be bigger and taller. If you make a basic low quality sign, what we're determining a base quality design, you don't get as much sign area, and you don't get to go as tall.
You know, I've been around in these new gas stations, like over in Shoreland and stuff. They don't allow those big, huge, tall signs anymore. They're more of a flat, square, wadi sign at the corners.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it depends. If a municipality has a strict conformance policy on their signs, and it's, you know, say 6 feet, they're going to do that horizontal design, which is similar to what Casey's did with their sign. Theirs is a horizontal.
Casey's got the sign items for signs because they needed to have the E85 and all that on there.
Theirs is a larger sign overall.
But they kept it under 12 feet.
I mean, that's the way if you talk about the way Future's going, that's what I'm seeing. I don't see these big, tall, huge signs like they're doing down the street.
Yeah.
You know?
So I think what we've got in here is trying to keep them lower to the ground in general. It works.
Right. How tall is that sign? Was it like 20 feet?
And the BP over that they applied for. That sign variance for the BP.
Oh,
4771.
Yeah, that was 24 feet, I believe. 24.
Yeah, that's. See, look, you're supposed to be at 14. That's 10 feet higher.
But they went through a variance process.
I know.
So they,
and we all unanimously said no to city council, Chris, by the way. And it still got approved, so.
But they had their process.
They went through the process. Yes. That's what I was trying to say. Yes. If you feel there's a hardship, we have to give you an opportunity to apply for it.
I don't see a hardship.
It doesn't have to be a hardship for signs. It has to be that you're on a high-traveled roadway. The visibility is an issue. There were some standards in there that had to do with the land use, and they agreed to only do one sign as opposed to
the speed of traffic
they would have
to the adjacent road.
Right.
There's extra standards for sign variances that play into whether or not it would be appropriate. And like you said, PZC said no, City Council said yes, that happens. I mean, that's.
Yeah. Well, anyway. Spilled milk, I don't know, but I like to, you know, try to stay uniform, you know, if we could get that accomplished, but it seems like every once in a while we get one of these requests.
I would love, Deb, to not have variances allowed for signage, but that's a state process. We can't dictate that.
Oh, really?
If they want to ask for the hardship, they have a right under state statute to do it. So we have to afford that process. And then it's up to the elected officials and the appointed, based on the Plan Commission, to make recommendations to the electeds. But yeah, I'm with you. Well, if we could eliminate that one.
I appreciate you telling me that. And I don't really have any more questions, but I hope I didn't bore you to keep you up.
If we have other things that come up, please do forward them as we're going through. One thing that I want to bring up, and I've been kind of stewing on this one, and I wanted to kind of see how it settled when it was first introduced and everything, and I'm having a little reservation on it. So we've eliminated the term family for unit. That doesn't settle well with me after I've gone through this and sat on this for a while, trying to digest that one and see if it fits. I'm sorry. The elimination of the term family from the document is still a legitimate unit for me, so I have an issue taking that one out and replacing it.
So if we replace, if we put it back in, we have to define it. So we would look to you to help us craft a definition for family.
Which is fine. I just, single unit dwellings and dual unit dwellings, that kind of thing, it just hasn't gone over well with me as I've been trying to figure this one out. I know there are other ones that have used it still. We actually still have the term in our draft right now. So.
It should not be.
Let's see here.
That was the hope.
Is it in San Francisco?
Let us know where it is. 7, 9, 10, 11, 12. And we can give you APA, which is American Planning Association, which is a credentialing body for both Jason and I, that says standards, set more standards, because, again, zoning use is to regulate the land, not the user. So we don't regulate who uses a dwelling unit. That's why we call it a dwelling unit. It could be a family, it could be friends, it could be cousins, it could be.
And I understand.
So that's why we don't use the term.
The point that for me is just kind of.
Well, not everybody would be a family, Chris.
And I understand that, Deb. I do. And that's why this one, that's why I've been trying to like digest it and have it, see if it does settle over the past few months.
Because if two friends decide to move in together, you know, to save money or whatever, you know, it's not really a family. I don't know.
We can define it very loosely.
We will come into an issue
more than
when it comes
person.
To well, when it comes to group homes, we cannot deny group homes.
Yes.
So then that would be a violation then if we have a definition of family and we associate it with the dwelling. That could be an issue too.
How do we define person? We're gonna open up that bag.
And that's what we're getting into. We're getting into the fact that we're defining terms or removing terms. Because it excludes one, includes only this one, and there's never going to be a perfect solution to it. We're not going to get around that. It's a matter of how much do we want to get into that. And personally, that's not the way I want to go down the path. So
it's legal. You don't want to.
Well, I want that on the record from my point of view that one is, you know, a discussion point that I think I would like to have as we move forward. Maybe we got to figure out how we can define that, but it's just one of those issues that everybody picks something that is an issue for them. So, all right, do we have any other thoughts on this one?
My issue is small lots.
Yeah.
Terminology.
Noted.
So, we're gonna move forward. This is gonna get some revisions to it.
Yes.
But the next meeting we're going to have is going to be on the new system. Or
no,
actually,
no,
not, not the
no,
new system.
I prefer to read, go through all these notes with HL.
Okay.
Make another draft.
One more draft before we get to that. Because that's what we wanted to get through all this, is before we go to the next unit, which is the actual
smart code.
We had this. So if we want to do one more meeting on this one?
Yes.
Okay.
Make sure they go through their notes and all the changes are incorporated.
I think from when we did the zoning code update, it would be helpful if staff prepares a cover memo, which lists from all the meeting minutes, the items that were decided or recommended from the committee and how it was addressed.
Yes. Right, because there are, let's see, we've had seven.
I went back and looked at them the other day myself in the minutes.
I think that
stuff,
would be
and
helpful.
I thought of what Chris was pointing out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and I'm not counting the first couple of our meetings because when we got started, we had COVID, we kind of broke down for a bit, and then we came back. I'm only counting the ones
we had
since we restarted.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Sure.
So there are seven sets of minutes to go through, and if you take the time to go through the audio, mm-hmm. if you're trying to find out exactly how the conversation went, because Marlis, your minutes are great. Mm-hmm. Don't cover everything, but they're very good. So if you go to the audio.
Yeah, you get the details.
It's not a court report.
Yeah, exactly. So. But like I said, if you've got more comments, if you come across something, please email staff and we'll get that incorporated so that we can try to get a clean copy for the next
one. I think it's coming along really good though. I mean, you guys have done a fantastic job.
Yes, this has been good. It's been a lot of work for staff, I know that, and our consultants.
It's fine tuning now.
Yeah.
We want to look at a meeting in March. Do we have the ability to, real quick, get some tentative dates out?
I like them at the end of the month because we have planning and zoning.
Yeah.
We were doing Wednesday and Thursday. It's just too much homework. I don't know.
So
Thursdays are better.
I threw out the 16th
Amen.
Or 23rd.
The 23rd or 30th, I believe I threw out there.
Okay. 23rd,
yes.
Not
this 23rd is good.
Or the 30th? One of the two.
Or the 30th?
Yeah. I know I can't even 16th
is out.
What
I know I won't be available because it's spring break the last week for the kids.
Yeah.
For school, so that's problematic for me.
So it's probably, if we shoot for the 23rd maybe then.
What day of the week is that?
It's a Thursday. I'm looking at Thursdays because Thursday seems
more interesting. I'm good with that. That's a month today.
I know I won't be able to make it.
Is that week the spring break for us? I don't know.
It starts the... That Friday, the 24th, is the
you're going to be out
starts for
probably,
the spring break. But I will be leaving the 23rd, so I will not be available 23rd all the way to April 1st.
So.
Well, Jeff should come, right? He could make it, maybe.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
I mean, ideally, we would try to have everybody, since it's going to be a last look before we move on.
Well, you want to do it the week before?
So the first week in April would be April 6th. Any objections to that?
That's when's planning and zoning?
PZC.
The 12th. It would be the next week.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's in opposite weeks.
I just don't want to do 500 pages of homework for 2 days.
Well, I do have, there is one issue. I'm still technically on paternity leave. And I won't be back till March 6th. I am doing some work from home, but it's very dependent on how much time I have. So if you guys want 2 weeks, we can do like the 23rd, but it might be best to go to April 6th if that works for everyone. And because I probably won't be able to talk to the consultant until I get back.
Let's go.
But is it planned? It's only like the 8th?
12th.
The 12th.
The following.
It'll be the 12th.
Oh, okay. I can do that one.
Yeah.
I could do that.
But the goal would be to get you like
here's
2 or 3 weeks with a new draft. So you would get it mid-March to look at.
Yeah, that gives us plenty of time to look through things.
Yes. Okay. And what are we actually going to go over? Just what we went over tonight?
They're going to go through the staff.
Yeah, I'll probably give you a whole new draft, but we'll definitely highlight, and like we said, cover memo of previous minutes of what's been addressed.
Yeah, that cover letter would be very helpful, summarizing, because there's a lot of information if you go through the seven sets of minutes.
I have one other thing for staff. I noticed you had staff, if there's a variance on a setback or something, 5 feet or whatever. Can you let us know, in a report, how many of those...
Sure. Those
you're approving,
we'd probably do that at the end of the year review. We could always or do you want a consistent
Yeah, I'd like to know. I mean, what, how many of these actually come up, and what was the result? I mean, as they go, so we can kind of get an idea of how this is working.
So let me just clarify. You're asking for, are you asking for existing data or a report based on once this is approved, if we have variances that come up? Are you looking for some back
data?
Yeah,
not a variance because staff can, you know, on minor changes, you know, approve them. But I'd like to see, you know, how many we get.
Because I know we have the back data for things that have been done. We get the reports. We get from, actually it goes to committee, anytime the action items that have gone through PCC, you get the summary.
But it wouldn't come to us, Chris. It would be staff.
She's talking about staff. When it's staff's revision.
When it's
under
staff's
5%,
amendment, yeah.
Zoning administrator yeah. has approval.
Like a monthly report, we can...
Or just at the next meeting, you know, something came up, you yeah. saw something, somebody came
doesn't
up.
Have to
weekly.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen now.
Yeah, we can put a notice in the admin weekly, which I think PCC
yeah.
members get as well.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's
yeah,
what I was going to
add. Okay. Alright.
Yeah, not something that has to go into the UDO, but something that can be done at a procedural level.
Yes, yeah. Just so we know, we're notified of these cases that come up, so we kind of know how this is working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Alright.
That's alright.
Staff doesn't mind doing that.
No, we don't end it here.
Thank you, staff.
For PCC?
Yes.
Oh, nice.
All right.
We do appreciate everything you do. Don't think we don't. We know you work hard.
Anything else?
No, that's it.
All right. No, I have comments, but I'll email them. Because I really want to just, you know, my beef, mm-hmm. one of my beefs is the electronic signs,
okay.
more or less the brightness, flashing, that sort of
okay.
thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I just want to bring that back up of, you know, I know we've gone through the code, we've talked about it so much, but, you know, basically look at, okay, there's one sign in particular, is that not conforming versus conforming at this point?
Yeah.
Are you talking about all illuminated signs or specifically like the changeable copy scrolling signs?
Yeah, more of the illuminated,
yeah.
you know, like the one I'm talking about is First National Bank
mm-hmm.
at 34 and Cannonball.
Yep, and then I could also throw in a couple other locations because, yes, while we have our ordinance that defines how many foot candles you can have at the property line, mm-hmm. the lighting from the signs doesn't seem to be taken into account, and I know we discussed that at length.
We did
because
signage.
They are close
signage
to
light
yes.
is not
okay.
supposed to spill over the property line.
Yes,
anymore.
And so we just want to make sure that we're addressing that.
I almost positively added that.
Okay.
Because yeah. Every time I drive by, it scares me. You know, that's it.
Well, I'll send our inspector out to make sure that they hadn't changed anything.
Right.
To
and I, yeah.
to the intensity.
And I don't even know if you were talking about wall-mounted before. Wall-mounted, you know, so I think it's freestanding, but it almost looks like it's wall-mounted.
No, it's a wall-mount. The one you're thinking of is a wall-mounted.
Is it? Okay, because
yeah.
I pulled it up and it looked like there was a base to it, so I didn't know if that was
clear. Is that the chiropractor's office?
No,
it's a
bank.
It's a bank.
Okay.
Kind of by Wings, etc. there?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then... You know, it's not our district, but, you know, as you're heading west, you know, the YMCA sign, you know, it looks like someone's pulled over every single time, you know, you're heading west on 34. Things like that, just trying to avoid those colors and...
Right.
Okay.
That's a good example.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, blue-red types of flashing lights.
Yeah, I think we have it as a prohibited sign. Anything that would be construed as a safety, I know it's in there.
What else you got, Dave?
And then it was, you know, it was the right of way versus utility versus parkway trees, roadway widths. I'm good with the widths. It was more or less the parkway trees versus utilities, you know, what Public Works had to say about that.
Yeah, if they wanted the trees.
I thought there was a mention too of, you know, parkway tree, you know, it depends on where the parkway tree goes. Either put the parkway tree in that 10-foot easement
mm-hmm.
or, you know, vice versa with the utility. So I just had wrote down, you know, at least a typical section image, just, you know, when we were looking at all the roadways and landscaping and things like that, that would it help to actually just have a quick, typical section of a roadway, like a local road that basically showed everything, like okay, you got your 10-foot easement, you got your right-of-way, you know, right-of-way to right-of-way, and then you have your roadway width, you know, roadway, mm-hmm. and that where all the utilities are defined. I know that gets...
Yeah. No, that's good.
You know, and it's just kind of the picture,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. Okay.
And then, you know, it shows where your gas, your storm, your water, your sanitary, you know, that sort of thing. I know we go into the subdivision control ordinance where it starts defining everything as far as the location of where, you know, public works want water on the north and west or, you know, something like that, you know, mm-hmm. the definition.
Prefer. Okay.
We had talked the electric box to stay in the back, not in the front, but... I don't know.
Comment change that.
We can't regulate that. Same as the mailboxes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything will be in the front now.
Mm-hmm.
Cluster box, mail, and utilities in the front, which is absolutely horrendous, but two entities we can't control.
Right.
Go figure. We talk about wanting to make the original park
that. We kept the parkways the same, right? We kept the parkways the same width. We didn't make it smaller.
I think it was, what, minimum of 7 foot?
Yeah, I think, yeah. I think we talked about it, I believe it went down to 5 when we put it back.
Yeah, that's right, there was a reduction to 5.
And then I think we put it back.
What are they now?
Are they very, actually?
Our parkways? I couldn't tell you.
We'll get that information.
We'll get that for you, though.
Okay. Thank you.
And then to Dave's point, that one sign is actually, I think, a ground-mounted sign. So something to think about, that ground-mounted sign is basically 1 or 2 feet away from the building.
Distance of ground-mounted sign.
It's a way of skirting the wall-mounted sign issue, so
right.
We may have to address that. Yep. I always thought it was a building mounted, but yeah, you're right, it does appear as a ground mounted.
Oh, there's loopholes for everything. And we'll be revisiting this code, I'm sure. It's a working document.
It's a living document.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, anything else?
No, I'm good.
All right, I think that's good.
Appreciate everybody commenting, thank you.
I'll send out a reminder email at 6, and we'll get on everyone's calendar.
All right, we will adjourn at 8:02. Thank you.
Thank you.
Does anybody want